The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Each and every day, we're about empowering people, sharing insights from all different realms of life, from science, nutrition, and health, and the environment, and important social commentaries. And then sharing that energy connection, the feedback loop. You have a lot of ideas, and we have a forum for you to express your ideas. Today, in the second part of our program, the real poverty in the United States and how it benefits the global banking cartels and the economic elitist agenda. 10 years ago, if you would have suggested that there was poverty due to a global banking cartel or an elite group, you'd have been considered a conspiratorialist, and no one would have taken you seriously. Today, virtually all the media and all those who are outside of the immediate control of the Washington establishment fully recognize that there is a ruling elite. Every single study shows that they have a disproportionate amount of power and wealth and resources and control over the body politic. So we're going to expose it. David DeGraw, an economic political award-winning journalist and founder of the commentary blog site AmpedStatus.com, is also the present editorial director for the media channel, and which is connected with the Progressive Radio Network host Danny Schechter. So we will be talking with him about who controls the world. America, body politic, where are they going with it? What we can do about it? Also today, several commentaries. I will be doing an original commentary of mine that I wrote yesterday for all of the younger single people in the United States who are confused about what to do and have not really applied themselves to the political process and to the social movements that could really benefit from their input. Also from Sheldon Richman, the elites and the Tea Party, the anti-authoritarians. This is an important commentary by Sheldon Richman because it echoes what I've been saying, and that is that be very careful about trying to attack everyone who is opposing authoritarian measures, because then you are defending authoritarian measures. And then these individuals will not be people that you'll be able to share your insights with. So I'll deal with that. How much has Wall Street lost and kept secret? $4 trillion. So I have a lot to share with you. Let's begin. As many people know, I am opposed to the standard use of antidepressants for many reasons, and I have published articles on these reasons. I've done a documentary, in fact, two documentaries, not the least of which was The Drugging of Our Children, which I'm doing a sequel to on pathologizing our children, as well as Prescription for Disaster. The latest from Reuters, people who use antidepressants, quote, for a long time, which is most people, because when you're on them, you're supposed to be on them for life, you're more likely to develop type 2 diabetes than individuals who don't use them. This is in the journal Diabetes Care, and once again, another set of diseases. This was done at University College in London. And also, stop using baby sleep devices. This is the latest, quote, sleep positioners marketed with the promise of helping babies sleep safely are too dangerous to use and should not be sold. That's according to the latest information from the Consumer Product Safety Commission It says, quote, the deaths and danger situations resulting from the use of infant sleep positioners are a serious concern. That's correct. I would agree with that. Calcium and vitamin D intake is associated with an increase weight loss in dieters from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, done at Ben-Gurion University in Israel. It says that if you take your calcium and if you take your vitamin D, about 600 milligrams of calcium, and what would be about 2,000 units of vitamin D, you will have a greater opportunity to lose weight, and that's good. I believe that we should be taking gamma, G-A-M-M-A, tocopherol, as well as gamma tocotrienols. And toco, T-O-C-O-T-R-I-N-O-L, tocotrienols, are fractions of the vitamin E. Well, the latest study from cancer research done at University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston shows that gamma tocotrienols inhibits pancreatic tumors in mice. And this is the latest on this. It says the and this is a major article, and it says that the cultural pancreatic cancer cell lines, when they use gamma tocotrienols, it suppresses the proliferation of all four cancer cell lines, and with higher doses and longer exposure produce a greater benefit. And they use 50 micromole dose. That's a very small dose. And so if they use really large doses, that would be good. Here's what they said. Quote, our findings suggest that gamma tocotrienols can inhibit the growth of human pancreatic tumors and sensitize them to chemotherapy by suppressing the NFKB-mediated inflammatory pathways linked to tumorigenesis. In lay language, it means that if you just took this inexpensive, non-toxic, all-natural supplement, tocotrienols, along with your vitamin E, I'm going to suggest 200 units of tocotrienols and 800 units of vitamin E as gamma, G-A-M-M-A, then you could be doing a lot of good. And if you know anyone who has pancreatic cancer, let them know. Some good research on this. Bad outcome with hormone replacement therapy and birth control pills, and most women take both. This is the latest, and from the Austrian Academy of Sciences in Vienna, they say that the synthetic hormone replacements, progestins, used in hormone replacement therapy and in contraceptives can increase the risk of breast cancers. So women, birth control pills, I wouldn't use them. I would use a different form of barrier protection. Also, I would never, ever suggest a woman use hormone replacement therapy that is synthetic. Now, one more study showing breast cancer increases. Also, garlic. Yesterday I mentioned the importance of garlic and how good it is. And when was it? Was it yesterday? One day recently. I do 15 hours of broadcasting a week, so I don't remember the exact day, but a person called and I gave them a protocol which included a lot of garlic. And garlic oil now also is a benefit. And this is it's a way of preventing heart disease. When you consider how many people die of heart disease, it's, if you can prevent it, good. This is from the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. And they're saying that garlic oil had enormous benefit in preventing cardiomyopathy. And by the way, cardiomyopathy is a form of heart disease that leads to death in people with diabetes. And it's very common in people who drink, because alcohol will cause cardiomyopathy. And finally, how anxiety can trip our brains. And this is University of Colorado researchers, and they found that people with anxiety, that's a lot of people today, have decreased neuronal inhibition, which makes decision-making difficult. Now, the neuron inhibition is a process that occurs when one nerve cell suppresses activity in another, a critical aspect in our ability to make choices. Now, this was presented at the proceedings in the journal, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And so then look at the opposite. By helping relieve anxiety, you are helping your brain process information better. So it's just that simple. Now, back in a moment, and then for all of the single people in this audience who are suffering from some anxiety and depression, and they frequently go hand in hand, and unfortunately we call that bipolar, and we shouldn't be calling it bipolar, I'll have some solutions for you.
Far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for all in love. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
I'd like to welcome all of you to our program. I'm Gary Nall. My thoughts on Mairead McGuire's being arrested when she got off a plane in Israel. This is Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and they're now going to deport her, and she was there to be a part of a peace lecture. So I'll share my thoughts on that. I'm sure you won't hear that in the mainstream media. What you will hear in the mainstream media is that Americans are filled with anxiety. And their suggestion is, watch television, go buy something, get high, get drunk, go buy a new car, ride a new car, do something crazy, watch crazy videos, do something like jumping on buildings. Just don't deal with the underlying actual causes. In 1943, psychologist Abraham Maslow, a really remarkable mind in my opinion, created his hierarchy of needs. A pyramid-shaped diagram which separates all human needs into layers that each person needs to build in order to become a self-actualized person. In other words, Maslow provided a checklist of the building blocks for a full life. Now, there are five layers in the pyramid, and it is necessary for you to secure the bottom four of levels of needs before you can become a fully actualized person, and one who is ideally devoid of the type of anxiety that we're seeing in people every single day. Since all needs have been met in a person that's not suffering from anxiety, and they will have the ability then to be a more moral, creative, resourceful, and responsible human being. And that's what we all want, isn't it, for ourselves and for others? If you had a choice of waking up in the morning and realizing that you are a moral person, you are a creative person, you're a resourceful person, and you're a responsible person. If you give your word, it means something. And someone can trust your word. How many times in the world have people said, by looking in your eyes, trust me, and shook your hand, and that's all they needed? They didn't need a 20-page fine print contract. They simply knew that there was a moral and ethical person on the other side of that decision. At the bottom level are our base physiological human needs: breathing, food, water, sleep, homeostasis, which is balance, and excretion, the ability to get rid of toxins. Now, these are merely the foundational needs to live. Without them, we cannot. Not understanding them means we'll breathe air that is polluted and eat water, drink water that is contaminated, and have food that is either over-concentrated in adulterants or refined carbohydrates or saturated fats or very inflammatory proanthocyanins, heterocyclic amines, or we deprive ourselves of sleep, in which case we then don't have internal balance. You can't tell it from the outside always, but inside there is crisis. And then, of course, then we have problems getting rid of the toxins through sweat, through excrement, through urine. So these are things we should pay attention to at all levels of life. Now, the next level up is safety requirements, such as the security of the body, shelter, employment, keeping healthy, and being able to provide your family what they need. These needs are those that secure livelihood, irrespective of the quality of that livelihood, since, as we all know, you can have a good job and food on the table, but your mood will still end up in the dumps from time to time. That's where the next two layers come in. So again, think of the basics. And I always like to make everything simple. Go right to the kernel of something. Look at it for what it is. Then it's simple. That's why I see no problems with anything as long as we keep it simple and honest. So if I want to take care of my basic needs of safety, then I must live in a safe place. I can't build a house on the side of a mountain in California or knowing where there could be a mudslide in Laguna Beach and 13 multi-million-dollar homes all slid in one another and they were all destroyed in one mudslide. I can't have a beautiful scene near a river and then suddenly that river in Wisconsin, the river in Iowa, overflows and suddenly my house is destroyed. Because I did not weigh the balance, the aesthetic view of being close to the river or close to the ocean or up in the mountains at Flagstaff, overlooking the beautiful desert below until I'm in the middle of a 20-year drought and everything around my house is kindling. And then it starts and then I'm rushing to get out of my house and it all goes up in flames. Or I'm by the ocean and a tsunami hits or a hurricane hits and I lose it all. Or I'm in an over-congested environment where there is not a quality of life. So you see, each one of these must be weighed in its significance. So the security of my body, knowing that I have a less likelihood of a heart attack or stroke because I keep my blood naturally thin by the green juices I take and the superfoods I put into myself and the nutrients that keep my body biochemistry healthy. It's not by guessing. There are hundreds of thousands of studies from peer-reviewed literature. I've reported on tens of thousands of these on this radio show. Every single study I cite comes from a peer-reviewed journal, from a respected institution, so it's not my opinion. So if I want to be healthy, I have to be at a lower weight. I can't walk around. If I walked around at my height and my body size, at let's say the average guy's body fat at 20%, I'd be 210 pounds. But I'm 185 with 2% body fat. And my biochemistry is that of a young man. The DNA that I've had done, the enormous amount of blood chemistries I have done, show my biochemistry is not aging in the normal way because I'm not doing what is considered normal. I'm doing something exceptional for myself because I want that exceptional security. I want the shelter where I have beauty in that environment. If it wasn't there naturally, I will build it, even starting with whatever simple things I can. Employment, I'm not the type of person that can work for other people because I don't bear fools well. I don't believe that a gigantic committee of all kinds of disparate individuals should have an input and you come up with something that doesn't work for anyone. Because nobody could get to the idea that maybe individuals have a decision they can make something right. So in my world, I run the risk of being broke on the street, destitute, because I have no system of security except what I create each day. So I have to recreate my world every day. But I have to visualize what would be my ideal employment, working on things that are important to me. In which case, if I'm coming from my spiritual self, that's working on issues that are important on a spiritual level, meaning helping other human beings, irrespective of the gain or loss that comes to me. And then being able to provide for your family. All of you who have been caregivers to other people know what it means when other people are relying upon you, not just your immediate family, but it could be friends who are out of work. And you extend them the best that you can. But a responsible person has that built into the equation. You're capable of doing it. And frequently you'll never know who your real friends are until you're in crisis. Then they will emerge. And these are the needs that are necessary at a different level. Now, love and esteem, I've saved for last. And this is especially important for all the younger people in my audience. Love and esteem are our higher needs in life, what we need to feel fully complete. Their layers in Maslow's pyramid intertwine. It's very difficult to have one without the other. Our love needs encompass friendships, family relationships, and sexual intimacy. While our esteem needs are having the self-esteem and confidence to gain respect from others and ourselves. So when we do something, we don't just rush through it. We don't do it absentmindedly. We don't do it without focus. We really focus. And for younger people, there are a lot of exceptions, but the general rule is an awful lot is done without any conscious thought as to the ultimate outcome. If you were to die tomorrow, could you say whatever I just did, if it was making my bed, or if it was doing some work, you could judge my life on it? The answer is no. We have lost in our whole younger generation, with exceptions, we have lost this whole concept of building authentic self-confidence and natural esteem by the quality of the choices we make. So this is important. Think about your last unsuccessful relationship, unless you're fortunate enough not to have had one. Were you happy during most of the relationship, gaining benefits from your partner? Or was the relationship filled with you and your partner's egotistical needs? Where would you push on each other to act a certain way or do certain things? Were you supporting and complimenting each other rather than seeking to fulfill your mutual selfish needs? Often when an individual enters a relationship before becoming more self-actualized, he or she will seek out his missing needs through their partner. And this can happen in multitude of ways. If a man is not confident, he may sarcastically insult his girlfriend, hoping to bring her down emotionally to his level, or he may require her to stroke his ego with compliments while failing to return any conscious favor to her. And when a partner is depressed or anxious, they may fail to see and meet their partner's authentic needs, being too wrapped up in their own problems. This whole culture of narcissism exemplifies that. Then afterwards, when the relationship ends, they are surprised and further depressed and feeling alone and isolated. We must learn to think of relationships as beautiful opportunities to grow from, not emotional support systems that are terribly codependent. Love isn't a beautiful experience, a powerful state of being that we all seek in our lives. When we have love, it picks us up. Our whole day feels better. The lack of love, however, can be a burden. A black missing gap that hangs over our lives. Yet it's important to be confident as individuals and capable of loving before being in a relationship. And once you're in a loving, caring relationship, you've got one of the best weapons against anxiety and depression and loneliness and a sense of incompleteness. Now, I know building the confidence to begin a relationship can be challenging, especially if you're recovering from anxiety, depression, or lack of self-esteem or over-assertiveness. Hopefully, what we discuss on this program will help you in your journey. I'm Gary Noll, and those are my thoughts. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Broadcasting from location, filming four separate major feature films, Poverty, Inc., The 12 Tipping Points, completing How to Be a Healthy Vegetarian. Our principal photography is done. I'll be finished shortly. Just one program announcement. Jessica from our department in New York City that is in customer service and sales, she needs someone who has a van to help bring our product from our manufacturer into our office so we can get it out to you. We ran out. We don't have a single can. The manufacturer has some. If you would be kind enough, have a van, and I'll give you a big bottle as a gift, 646-926-5432. 646-926-5432. And please don't anyone else call and order it because we don't have any right now to sell. We've sold out. And I have to make these in small batches because I have to pay for them in advance. And it's this is a 5.5-pound jar with everything in it. It's very expensive for me. It's the most expensive product I've ever created on my cost because I wanted the best of everything in it and a lot of the best of everything in it. So it really made a difference. And so we got them in and we sold them all. So now we're going to get some more in. And I don't want people waiting 2 or 3 days. I like to get it in and out the door within 24 hours. So if you can help us go get the product, we'll get it off and get it out in the mail to you. So call Jessica if you have a van and can just come in and take a couple hours. 646-926-5432. Thank you. Just one little quick comment, and I would like your thoughts on this. I'd like for you to call in before we go to our guest in about 10 minutes, David DeGraw, talking about the real poverty in the United States and how it benefits the global banking cartels and the economic elitist behind this whole agenda. Who are they? How are they doing it? What control do they have over the media? But now just your opinion on the following. There is a woman, and she is a remarkable woman. Her name is Corrigan McGuire. She's from Ireland, Northern Ireland, and she is a Northern Irish peace activist. She co-founded with Betty Williams the Community on Peace People. That's an organization which attempts to encourage a peaceful resolution of the troubled Northern Ireland. And the two women received the Nobel Peace Prize, and she's won many other awards also. And she's become critical of there's not real progress in the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. And she's a major advocate of that and to try to show the suffering that occurs and what can be done to end it. And by the way, she became active with the peace movement after three children of her sister, Anne McGuire, were run over and killed by a car driven by Danny Lennon, a provincial Irish Republican Army man who was fatally shot by the British troops while trying to make a getaway. And her sister later committed suicide. She has also founded Women of Peace, and she is probably responsible for bringing more Nobel Prize winning women together to do what is right on peace. Anyhow, she was invited as Nobel Peace Prize winner to share her views in Tel Aviv, and she was arrested when she got off the plane today. And they refused to allow her to enter. Now they want to throw her out of the country. And here's my question. This past week, a group of people from my home state, West Virginia, people I used to live with up in Wheeling and Weirton, West Virginia. I live right in the middle of coal country in Weirton Steel and Wheeling Steel. So this is something I am intimately familiar with. They marched with people from Kentucky and Tennessee, the whole Appalachian area, to Washington and protested outside the White House to stop all this mountaintop removal, which is a massive ecological disaster for the people there, and pollutes their water, their air, makes their area completely unsafe. But Barack Obama is for coal. He's for the myth of clean coal, and I'm sure you've seen the commercials about clean coal. It's a myth. It doesn't exist, and it won't. But Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize, and yet we've never had a president in history has committed themselves more to war and is more a neocon, but called a lefty, which is remarkable because I don't know any leftists coming from the left, coming from the liberal community, being at the heart of it. I don't know anyone anywhere that supports this imperialist war going on in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in Pakistan and probably in Iran, and one-sided behavior with Israel against the Palestinians than this president. And yet, he won the Nobel Prize. Isn't it time he did something, actually stood up and not wavered? Wouldn't it be nice that had he gone out there this week and introduced himself to the people and said, I understand your pain. You wouldn't be here if you weren't suffering. And told the police, don't arrest these people. Well, those people were doing what demonstrators have done. Those who got arrested at the South African embassy opposing apartheid. Those who got arrested opposing the Vietnam War. And those for all of the different arrests over this time, he could have shown that he was not just another neocon, corporatist Democrat like Bill Clinton. He's a human being who cared about progressive causes. And of all the things in the world, to get a Nobel Prize for Peace and not speak up for a Nobel Prize Peace, real Nobel Prize Peace advocate, to me is just cowardly. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you, because this is just two things within 1 week that he could have stood up and made a difference. He could have if he chose to, and he didn't. We have Bill on hold. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you? I got a quick question here for you. I mean, the work that you've done over the years is so fantastic. And yet, from time to time, some of the people out there, for some reason, who don't like you, which I can't imagine why, say things about you. How do you deal with this personally, business-wise, you know, with, and cause-wise? I mean, no one likes to be attacked, especially what they're saying is just total lies.
Let me put it in perspective. I was told, true or not, I didn't choose to verify, I don't have the time, quite frankly, I don't have the interest, that I generate between $5 and $7 billion a year in the United States economy. How so? Because I have 25 separate programs appearing on public television stations around the country. In one recent year, I think there were 13,000 two-hour broadcasts. That's 26,000 hours in one country on topics that are not political, they're not religious, they're just basic to our survival. So suddenly someone watches something and says, that makes sense, and I'm going to start eating more berries. So they go to, and I'm going to eat some healthy berries. Well, maybe it's not organic, it begins, and then maybe it's the farmer's market, and then maybe it's some organic berries. And then well, I'm going to take some vitamin E to help thin my blood. They're not going to walk into a store and say, Gary Noll suggested I come in here and buy this. They're just going to start shifting how they eat and the choices they make from one area to another. I was dealing with raw foods 30 years ago. Now it's all the rage. But there was a progenitor. There was a beginning to all this. And there were only two of us in the United States who were well-known nutritionists. That's it. There were only two in the media. Carlton Fredericks, who represented the meat and the big protein diets, and all you had to have is a little 5-milligram B-complex and everything was fine. And myself, that represented a new paradigm. So I helped literally create the paradigm that we have today. People might have forgotten about it, but I'm sure there are people in this audience who were listening when I was on WMCA and then on BAI for 27 years, who in their own lives gave up white bread and started eating whole grain bread, or maybe went from whole grain to Ezekiel or Sprouted, who gave up meat to go to chicken, or gave up chicken to go to fish, and gave up fish to go to beans. But these are subtle changes, and it doesn't happen all at once. Well, when we were advocating this, I then was also a journalist. People don't realize that I was an investigative reporter and a public activist against the corruption that I saw. I hear you typing. Don't type, Bill. I can hear you typing.
Sorry, just making notes.
No, don't. Your mind's the best recorder you've got.
Okay.
So I first went against the pesticide makers, supporting what the great Rachel Carson had started to help get DDT banned, and we did. And wrote articles about it and debated. Then sugar, meat, dairy, artificial sweeteners, drugs. Then I went on the whole, and starting 1976, I went in articles, feature articles, on cancer, heart disease. And I had 56 cover stories. That's major, major stories. And who published them? General Media did. And if that's Penthouse. And if you didn't like Penthouse, understand that I first went to Mother Jones. And the managing editor says, I'd love to publish your article, Gary. My uncle is Dr. Manuel Rivisi, one of the people you talk about being repressed and hit upon. And yet, if I did, we would lose our advertisers. I went to Atlantic Monthly and Harper's. I went to the East Village Other and the Village Voice. Every left and liberal publication refused to touch them because they knew that there would be an enormous backlash, so they didn't touch them. But Bob Guccione didn't even, I didn't know who he was. I'd never read Penthouse. And a man named Al Friedman took me to see him, and as we sat there, around this table, every single major employee who worked for him, including a man named Roy Grupman, who was his chief counsel, said, if you publish these articles, we're going to lose $7 million in advertising and we're going to get hit with lawsuits. And Guccione said this. He turned to me and he said, is this true? Could we save lives with these alternative cancer therapies? And I said, yes. I will show you 500 files. Actual files of people who were terminally ill prior to going in to see Dr. Rivisi and 5 years later have no cancer. I have the medical documentation. He said, show it to me. So I brought him all the files. I then brought him the files of a Dr. Lawrence Burton and a Dr. Virginia Livingston Weider and Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski. And we would sit night after night and go over these files until finally he called up a man who was his editor-in-chief and said, we're going to run him. And I could hear the guy screaming at Bob on the other end of the phone. If you publish these crap, I'm going to leave. And Bob was always very quiet. And he said, then you have to leave because this man is taking an enormous risk. And we're going to share in that risk. But he doesn't have the resources to get this information out. And if we can save lives, we have a more response to do so. So he published the articles, but he did it in this way. He said, I understand, Gary, that your audience, which has a lot of feminists in it and whatnot, may be offended by the editorial content or the picture content in my magazine. So I will make the articles available just as pure articles free to them. articles. Nobody has to buy my magazine in order to get your articles. And then he had them medically vetted. He brought in a group of outside medical doctors and investigative reporters and lawyers. We would spend hundreds of hours going, prove this, verify that, prove this, verify that. It was a torturous process that no one who publishes in peer-reviewed literature has to go through. But they want to make sure there was no lawsuits. There has never been a lawsuit. And so we published them, and they were an enormous sensation. So important were these that Don Hewlett, executive editor and executive producer of 60 Minutes, called me in his office. And I went in with a whole box on Lawrence Burton. I gave him the box. I gave him all my material. I spent 2.5 hours. And they did a feature. I wouldn't give him credit, but it was all my work, everything. Then Judy Moses of 60 Minutes, 2020, this time I recorded everything. I have everything on recording of Judy Moses and everyone at 2020, in case anybody ever licensed that it was my material. I got it all proof. But at the end, I only care that it got out. And they won an Emmy for my work on Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski and kept Brzezinski from losing his license. And that began a whole paradigm of other journalists being able to have a forum to get in there and talk about alternative therapies that were repressed and going hard head right at the medical community, and they fought back. So now I was at the center of leading the largest effort against the medical establishment in American history. I was pumping out articles, original investigative reports, caveat emptor, debating everywhere I could. And then one day this guy shows up and he says to me, stranger, he says, I'm going to give you some information. Pay attention to it. They're going to take you down. I said, who are they? Some pharmaceutical people. He said, in the very near future, you're going to meet, and what you would consider completely, you know, happenstance, you're going to meet a woman. She'll be tall, attractive. Her name will be Catherine. She is their plant. It will seem like you have everything in common with her. Her intent is to get into your life on a personal level and then get into your life where she can get a look at who your sources are, because they can't find your sources. They're looking to discredit your sources, to stop the information that gets to you from all these medical centers, and that's embarrassing them. And these guys play rough and they control the media. You're not going to find the New York Times. They control the New York Times. They control all the major media. And so I didn't know whether he was serious or not. So about 3 weeks later, I'm walking out of Bill Boggs' Channel 5 doing a broadcast. And this woman comes up and she says, oh, Gary, she says, I live nearby and I saw you. And I just want to know, I want your autograph. I brought one of your books. In fact, I brought two of your books. So I signed Complete Handbook of Nutrition and How to Get Rid of the Toxins in Your Body. And she said, I want you to know that that we need more people like you out there. There's just you and Ralph Nader, and that's it. And but you're doing for health what Ralph Nader has done for cars. And I have background in doing research, and I'd love to donate some time sometime. And I didn't think anything of it. I said, fine. And she said, well, just take my number. If you ever feel that you can use another hand, no strings attached, no money. I said, well, I don't have any money. You know, I just do what I can myself. So I go home, and when I get home and I take the change out of my pocket and I put it, I look at her card, and her name was Catherine. So my older brother was working with me at the time, Howard. And he's the smartest of us all in my family. And I said, Howard, what should you do? He says, invite her. I said, why? She's going to look in my files. She's going to see who my sources are for my stories. No, you don't get it, Gary. If she doesn't know that we know who she is, we can follow her at night and see where she goes, who are her contacts, and expose them. And that's what we did. And it worked up to a point. But then I came to this realization that there's a whole group out there. And by the way, it was because of that that I was instrumental in one of the people disseminating articles that were taken out of AMA headquarters that led to the largest lawsuit against organized medicine in American history. And they were found guilty, and that guilt was upheld to the Supreme Court. And people might not realize this, that I helped save chiropractic. I did two landmark articles in Penthouse on chiropractic, and more than 2 million reprints of the articles were ordered. In fact, I remember Guccione called me and said, do you realize this has cost me over $200,000? I said, I know. I said, but those are your people who are going to be out there spreading the word. So on the one hand, Bill, when you go up as I do now against vaccines, I probably cost the vaccine industry, I'm going to guess, about $100 million last year. And then when I go up against the pharmaceutical industry and the drugging of our children, I'm costing them. I'm raising people's awareness so they have to fight back, and they fight dirty. So they're going to put up stuff, oh, he doesn't have any education, he's an idiot, he's a quack, he's like Kevin Trudeau and all this. They'll do anything they can, but they'll never debate me, because when they do, they lose. And when they do stuff where they have plausible deniability, and then they run. Because when they did this and I caught him on ABC, starting with Dr. Dean Adell, I sued him. And I sued ABC Network when I was on ABC. And then I sued Quaker Oats. And I sued the Pritikin Program, and I won. They all said, oh, he doesn't have a legitimate degree. Well, I showed I did. Not only did I show I did, but I also graduated, was the first graduate who actually received an outstanding achievement from the university. No student in its history had until they gave it to me. And so then they realized, gee whiz, he'll fight back. Oh, yeah, but I won't be distracted by the fight. And that's why at a certain point they want you to be distracted. They want you to spend nothing but staying on the blog, defending yourself all day. And I'm too busy doing important work and helping the progressive and independent movement, millions and millions of people who are now no longer captive to one reality fits all, Democrat, Republican. Instead, there are too many of us now, and there are others of us that have a forum, like Mike Adams, a very courageous guy. So it's not just me that they could target. Yes, I have the largest audience, and yes, I'm doing the most reporting, and they're terrified of my new documentary. I can promise you one of the reasons they're doing this right now is because of my new Death by Medicine coming out, which is going to devastate them. And right behind that's Greed Street. Right behind that is the 12 Tipping Points. Right behind that is the pathologizing of our children, all of which adversely affect Wall Street, the ruling cartels, and even my next guest has been filmed for the Greed Street. And so that could cost them billions of dollars. So if the public believes in what I'm saying and verifies my information, then it will take away from them supporting their drugs, and your doctor's always right, and don't open your mouth. And as I said recently, when the person says, well, why are you questioning the doctor when the doctor said to him, take your chemotherapy and radiation and surgery? And I said, because that doctor didn't apologize for the 400,000 toe tags, dead victims that didn't question the doctor, didn't question the chemotherapy, and they died. Did anyone apologize? Did anybody give the money back? Did any hospital learn a lesson? Did any medical community apologize? No. So that's where I'm at. So I will always have detractors. I will always have those taking pot shots, and it will be cheap things, but the audience knows better.
Yeah, you can't be intimidated. I'll tell you right now. I mean, I've seen you over the years with what you've done, and I would, it'd be a scary thing to try to intimidate Gary. No,
I don't have fear in my resume. I'll stand up to anyone at any time, any place, on any principle, and I won't blink, and I don't bluff. And that's what bothers them. So they have to rely to dirty tricks. They have to rely to besmirching. But I'm not married having an affair. I'm not using alcohol. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I don't consort with criminals. You know, what are they going to do except try to do stupid things, saying, oh, you know, I remember they said he won a silver microphone award, but that's, you know, that's good, but it's only for commercials. Wrong. It was for outstanding broadcasting, and if we took the time to look at the actual awards, it was for the drugging of our children, and I won 21 of those awards. Ah, big mistake they make, but they do nothing but make mistakes, realizing most people don't have scholarship and research, and they realize as a public figure they can say anything about you, and you have very little room to fight back unless they step over the line. If they step over the line and say something that's inaccurate, then I nail them with a libel suit. When I do, I win. So don't be concerned. If you see something out there you know is wrong, fight them. If you're arguing with them and seeing who they are and where they get their money and who they actually are, not the false names they use, then they're like cockroaches where you turn on a light. And the Quackbusters are nothing more than cockroaches. Stephen Barrett and the rest of these individuals, you could discredit them with half your brain lobotomized. All right?
Yep.
But I just don't have the time because I'm doing too many important things to help empower people, make better choices. And that means every day, as I have for my entire career, I have to go into the trenches and I have to look at evil in the eye. And I have to be prepared in that moment alone, if necessary, to take on the full force of the FDA and the AMA and the medical cartels and the pharmaceutical industry and the pesticide industry and continue to fight for the truth that needs to emanate from that. And these people are tiny little fleas trying to distract, and they don't.
Well, okay. Lastly, before I get out of here, I met with a doctor the other day at a meeting type of thing, and he's extremely successful in treating diabetes. And I said, what's your secret? And we were talking privately. He says, my secret is Gary Null. This is a medical doctor, and he said he uses your protocols even to the extent where the guys coming around to sell him drugs, the reps and so forth, get very upset with him because he says it doesn't help at all unless you treat the origination of the problem. He said to me, if you haven't read it, get Gary Null's book, No More Diabetes or something like that. And I want to tell you that you are having an impact in the regular medical community from those willing to take a chance.
Well, I speak with doctors all the time. Remember The Insider, where the journalist Lowell Bergman was, and Jeffrey Weinard from, he worked for Brown and Williams, the tobacco company.
Oh, sure, yeah, the tobacco company.
Yeah, and he went forward as a whistleblower to tell the truth.
Right.
And how 60 Minutes decided not to go ahead and air the show because they would lose sponsors.
Right.
And then you have the Sarbanes-Oxley Act on Wall Street to keep them from covering up. And one of the guys, what was his name? Was it Groves?
Found
that the actual software that was to prevent them from erasing information actually had a back door that allowed them to erase. And he went to the Security Exchange Commission, and they went ahead and bought the software. And so every day, thousands of whistleblowers who could tell us the truth. Nobody wants to take on these industries. Nobody, they fear losing money. They fear losing reputation. They fear being blacklisted. We need more whistleblowers in America. Thank you very much. We got to go to Dave DeGraw, and I'm just introducing David today because David's going to be doing a full one-hour special with me on his just-completed new book, The Road to World War III. The global banking cartel has one card left to play. I just want you to introduce the theme today so we'll know what to expect. This is a coming attraction short interview. David, nice to have you with us.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
And David DeGraw is an economic and political journalist. He's one of those guys who are fearless, and he is also the editorial director of Media Channel, which, by the way, is also connected to Danny Schechter. Tell us about what we are facing now and in the near future from this global elite and how the real poverty in the United States is benefiting these people and how they are behind it, manipulating it to take it their way.
Right. Well, first off, I just want to say that the title you mentioned is actually the title of part one. The book is called The Road Through 2012, Revolution or World War III. And in the first part, which you read, I lay out the case that we were on the road to World War III. And just to sum that case up really fast, it's a very complex situation, obviously. But, you know, if you look at the U.S. economy and many nations throughout the world, okay, my thesis here is that these economies have been looted and destroyed beyond repair, okay? And, I mean, the only in current political environment, I say, beyond repair. Because obviously, if we had something like a revolution in the United States, and then we ended up breaking up the banks and holding the people accountable who stole, you know, trillions of dollars of national wealth, seizing their assets, you know, stopping the billions per year.
We're just going to say goodbye to our WMYE audience, David, and they can continue listening to what you have to say on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Please continue.
Okay, so basically my thesis here is, you know, unless there is an all-out revolution in the United States, we are on a path to a world war. And this is because the global economy has been destroyed and the people who did it are not held accountable. They're still in positions of power. At the same time, we have an increasingly hostile environment with increasingly limited resources. Growing for the first time in human history, we just crossed into the ecological red, meaning we are now consuming resources faster than the Earth can produce them. So as the global economy continues its downward spiral, and as there's less resources and increasingly hostile extreme weather situations, nations are going to continue to battle over those, limited resources. And, with poverty going through the roof, and resources plummeting while the population continues to grow, we are, unfortunately, I don't like to come to this conclusion, but we are headed into an extraordinarily difficult, tumultuous, and dark period in U.S. history and in, the global humanity's history. I mean, that's my argument in a nutshell.
And tell us, who are the architects, names we would recognize, and what role specifically, right, by your documentation, can you prove that they've played? If you were in a court of law,
right,
today,
yep,
if you were in the world court,
yep,
and in Geneva, and you said, I accuse.
Right. Well, look, I try to avoid the, the kind of like ultimate conspiracy theory, a small group of men sitting in a room deciding the fate of the world. I don't particularly subscribe to that. I think it's more of an ideology where, the richest people on the planet kind of have their own self-interests and group interests, and they kind of adhere to that. But certainly, after researching it, you have to conclude that institutions that were basically came out of the ruins of World War II are the primary drivers behind this global catastrophe that we're just beginning to see. And these global institutions, of course, are the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and also at the close of World War II, we got the National Security Act, which, of course, gave us the CIA. And, the National Security Act basically torched the Constitution, to put it bluntly, because anything unconstitutional all of a sudden became national security. So the IMF and the CIA kind of went around the world destroying, overthrowing government after government. In the early days of the IMF, it was done, militarily through death squads and, the likes. And then, recently, certainly over the past 20 years, there's been the economic imperialism that has sprung up. And, this is overthrowing nations through economic means.
What I want to do is, we're going to be having you on for a full hour to go through each one of these stages. I just want people to know that for years, when individuals, responsible individuals, I'm not talking about people who were just paranoid, but responsible journalists said that there are a small number of organizations and banks and individuals that, in effect, put puppets in position of power. People,
right,
who can be charismatic and friendly, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., Ronald Reagan, not Jimmy Carter, but these were all their spokespersons. It is really irrelevant whether they're Democrat or Republican. It is irrelevant how conservative or liberal they are, because they are all corporatists, meaning at the end of the day, virtually all of the issues come down benefiting them, just as we've seen. TARP benefited only the major banks, with nothing that was made transparent. Ben Bernanke, when asked by Bernie Sanders of Vermont exactly who they gave money to and would you tell us, he said, no, I'm not going to tell you. And yet when they wanted the money, they said there'd be transparency. So who got that $700 billion and did nothing to help Americans for it? These are the people you're talking about. It's the people behind Goldman Sachs, behind Citigroup. These are the people,
right,
who are the ultimate industrialists. These are the people who have their spokespersons at the business roundtable. They have their spokespersons at the Council on Foreign Relations, the Council, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group. These are the people that control the media. In fact, most members of every industry have major policymakers and opinion leaders who sit on the inner boards, advisory boards of these institutions. And then media invites them in. Like yesterday, one example. I happen to like Shepard Smith. I think he does a good show. I like his, I'm from the South, and I like that kind of southern sensibility he brings. He's not a firebrand like some of the other people at Fox. But he had Judith Miller on. The question being asked was, we're going to ask Judith Miller about should we attack Iran and for its missiles, and what is the likely outcome? Now imagine, this was the woman who at the New York Times, and who won a Pulitzer at the New York Times, was the number one journalist in America advocating preemptive strikes because of her inside source that talked about weapons of mass destruction. That information at the time I found out as a journalist, was coming through Cheney's office and already been discredited. I did a series of broadcasts. You go back and you listen. You'll hear me talking about Judith Miller is wrong, the New York Times is wrong. We have the ability to show you that this was a man put up by Chalabi. You know Chalabi. He was the one that the neocons were supporting. He is probably the second most powerful man in Iraq today, a complete criminal. He was found guilty in absentia for embezzling over $100 million when he was involved with a bank in Jordan. In any case, Chalabi's people had put up this complete idiot who pretended to have all these secrets. But when German intelligence and even people in the CIA interviewed him, they said he's not credible. Cheney's office, who created their own intelligence inner White House agency that bypassed CIA and bypassed FBI, gave this to Judith Miller. Miller then got us into war. She was a primary vehicle for getting us into war. You then have that person that got us into Iraq and have never apologized. You have her then saying that what we should do in Iran? No, she's a war hawk. She is a warmonger. She shouldn't be anywhere near giving an opinion when she's been wrong. And look at the effects. 1.5 million dead civilians in Iraq, 3 million displaced. Hundreds of thousands of injured and sick Americans, thousands dead, $3 trillion wasted, and she is responsible for a lot of that? No. And that's what's happening today. But she is there because of how it works. Who opens the door to get people a radio show, a television show, a book deal, a bestseller? Bestsellers have nothing to do with the public wanting to read a book. They are manufactured. Celebrity shows are manufactured. Everything is a manufacturing from people behind the scenes who control everything. And that's what we're going to talk about, David, because this is what you've exposed. But you've exposed it at the level of policy making, of political making, and of financial making like no right. one else. So we look forward to this 1 hour conversation.
All right, Gary, real quick though, what you were talking about with Chalabi and all that, that was all SAIC, which was Robert Gates' company before he became Secretary of Defense, of course. They manufactured the fake intelligence. They made the fake weapons lab that they found, which was proved to be false. The whole interim government for Iraq was all SAIC employees. And I mention this because SAIC is really at the top of the intelligence complex, and they are also charged with creating the so-called security for electronic voting machines. So SAIC is just the most scandalous intelligence company you could think of at the height of power. But, you know, this is another one of those things. It's hard to talk about it without people wanting to instantly dismiss you as a conspiracy theorist. Meanwhile, these things are all out in the open, and if you take the time to research it, you'll see it for yourself.
Well, that's what we're giving you a full hour to do, uninterrupted. We look forward to having you back. This was just a coming attraction to let people know what's coming, the real poverty in the United States and how it benefits the global banking system by award-winning economic and political journalist David DeGraw. David, thank you for being on.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it and look forward to our next conversation.
We will have a one-hour conversation within the next week. Coming up right now, let's go into our Progressive Radio Network, and Mike Fader standing by with the Turning Point.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.